Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now underway in Albany, a historic overhaul of the Rockefeller drug laws being negotiated in the New York State Legislature. The heart of those laws was mandatory prison, even for many low-level, nonviolent drug offenders. Now, judges may get the discretion to evaluate drug offenders on more of a case-by-case basis and decide on rehab if they think it's right. With me now is Gladys Carrion, Commissioner of the New York State Office of Children and Family Services and an advocate for juvenile justice reform. She was appointed by Governor, were you appointed by Governor Spitzer or Governor Patterson originally?
Spitzer.
So you've been there now for
2 years.
2 years. And she's also ex officio member of a task force that the state has created to consider how to revamp the juvenile justice system, alternatives to incarceration, one of her main interests. So, Commissioner Carrion, hello. Thanks so much for coming into WNYC today.
Oh, thank you.
And we scheduled this interview, as you know, before the Assembly suddenly took up and passed their bill this week. But is Rockefeller drug law reform consistent with the kinds of things you're interested in for juvenile justice in New York?
Oh, absolutely. Especially since so many young people that come into our juvenile justice system have substance abuse problems. In fact, close to 75% of the young people that are placed with OCFS have substance abuse issues. So this is a very important issue.
And for the background of our listeners, who is covered by the juvenile justice system and who goes into adult court?
Well, in the state of New York, young people under the age of 16 go through the juvenile justice system. 16 to 18 go through the adult system for certain crimes, some more severe crimes. They're treated as adults.
And do the Rockefeller laws apply to juveniles in any way?
Well, the older juvenile population.
So do you see Rockefeller laws as affecting communities, not just individuals convicted of drug crimes?
Oh, absolutely. It affects communities. It has impacted on so many poor people for very low-level drug offenses that everyone really does think at this point that they could be better served through rehabilitation, through drug programs, and not incarceration.
And we can take phone calls for Commissioner Carrion at 212-433-WNYC. Has your family been through the juvenile justice system in any way as loved one, as perp, as victim? In any way, you can call and talk to the Commissioner of Child and Family Services for New York State, Gladys Carrion, right now, 212-433-WNYC, and also talk about Rockefeller drug law reform. Do you want to see this? I know some prosecutors are against this. Some police officers and police groups are against this reform. You think it's going to be more dangerous on the streets in these very affected communities? You can give us a call if you're in those groups or anyone else, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Tell us about this task force. What is the governor hoping to reevaluate in terms of juvenile justice in New York State?
I think the governor is very interested in helping to push a different model for juvenile justice in the state of New York. The task force was convened to really look at transforming juvenile justice in the state of New York. It continues to be a very correctional model, and despite lots of change in other states across the country and revisiting how we treat young people, we have not done that in New York. And so the governor was very interested, as I was, in really taking a very close look on what we need to do to change our juvenile justice system's focus to more of a therapeutic focus and really look at who we are incarcerating, what young people are we incarcerating in the state of New York, and what we discovered, that many of them have substance abuse problems, many of them have mental illness problems, many of them have special educational needs, and that may be best served in another environment, in another system, rather than in the juvenile justice system, which really in the state has continued to be rather punitive. So we're looking very closely, and we've discovered that close to, if not even more than 50% of the young people in our system are there for low-level misdemeanor, nonviolent offenses that we think could be best served in the community.
We hear this phrase, alternatives to incarceration, and it's obvious in the case of a drug addict, an alternative to incarceration might be rehab. What are other alternatives to incarceration?
Well, other alternatives to incarceration are programs at the community level that really focus on the root causes. And there might be some family problems. There might be some truancy problems. There might be needs for some mental health interventions to really help that young person and really help the family. So an alternative is to really do family counseling, intensive family counseling, to wrap services around that family to stabilize the family and help them support that young person. It might be a special educational program. It might be assessing what are their needs, what is the intervention here that would help move this young person from antisocial behavior rather than incarcerating them, putting them in a facility that's hundreds of miles away from the city of New York. The overwhelming majority of children come from New York City, Westchester, Long Island, and we place them in facilities that are very far from the city, making it very difficult to engage families to really develop a plan for reentry in the community. I like to always say, I don't get to keep these children forever. They come back to our communities.
On the Rockefeller drug laws, Mike in Manhattan, a former prosecutor, is calling in. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on WNYC.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
Okay.
As a former prosecutor, the biggest problem with these laws, and actually seeing them in work in court, is that selling drugs is a felony, while possessing drugs in New York State is a misdemeanor. So what you're having are drug dealers entering rehabilitation programs in lieu of jail, and the people who actually need the programs being the drug users who are mostly arrested for possession, which is a minor misdemeanor, they receive 10 to 15 days and are sent on their way. So I've seen hundreds of people who sell drugs enter the system only to be given a drug rehab program and then being let go. So I'd like to have the commissioner address that.
Well, actually, I can't address that because that really
that's out of my area of expertise.
Of
juvenile justice. But that's a concern he has. But along these lines, you have critics similar to the critics of the Rockefeller drug law reform, and they sometimes include prosecutors who are worried about more violent offenders on the street. Here is part of an editorial from the Rochester newspaper, the Democrat and Chronicle, from a few weeks ago. And it's about the shooting of Rochester police officer Anthony DiPanzio, a big case, tragic case up there. And it says, when the suspect in the shooting, Tyquan Rivera, 14, violated his conditions of probation, he was placed at St. Joseph's Villa. That's a juvenile detention facility. Unlike at family services facilities, Rivera was able to walk away from the program undetected. If this youth had been placed in a state family services facility, he would not have been able to walk out, as opposed to this private facility. His attendance in the program would have been assured, his plan for rehabilitation followed. Now, clearly, this is an op-ed from an interested party, from a union leader who represents workers at the state facilities.
That's right.
So I should put that on the table. But what about the argument there in terms of letting kids out easily enough when perhaps the community needs to be protected from them?
Clearly, young people that pose a threat to public safety need to be placed in an institution. Most of the young people, many of the young people that are now in our institutions are not a threat to public safety or to themselves. And in fact, the assessment of this young person didn't indicate that he was at risk. We're not going to incarcerate everyone in the state of New York. That doesn't work, and we all know that doesn't work. So the union has a vested interest here, as you said, and the vested interest, unfortunately, is solely focused on preserving employment and preserving jobs for their members. And while I am sensitive to that, that clearly is not my primary responsibility. But my primary responsibility is improving outcomes for young people and giving them an opportunity for a second chance.
Let's take another call. This is Nick in Bayville, but originally from Europe, right, Nick?
Yes, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call, and I want to thank the commissioner as well. I really sense that she gets it. In Europe, the philosophy is that that drug addiction is more of a social issue than it is a criminal issue. And as someone that's a recovering addict myself, I found that that there has to be consequences. But jail is, I don't think jail is the first one. But I think that it's just refreshing to see that these Rockefeller laws are now going to be put on the back burner, because I just think they've been so destructive for so long.
Nick, what are some of the other consequences besides jail that you see in the country that you came from?
Well, I see that you would have to attend 12-step meetings. You would have to get signed off on those. You'd have to sign in every week with law enforcement. You know, that there was an ongoing program, but there was consequences to your actions. You weren't just kind of put out there and left free-floating, as it were.
Right. Nick, thank you very much. And I think we should clarify, too, that the Rockefeller drug laws, or these portions of them that are up for reform or repeal, have not yet been changed. The Assembly passed a bill. It's supposed to face more obstacles in the state Senate, though ultimate passage of some version of this is expected. But just so we're not confusing all of you, this is not a done deal. It's a done deal in the Assembly. But the Assembly was always ready to pass Rockefeller drug law reform. The state Senate under Republican control was not. Now the state Senate under Democratic control for the first time is getting closer, but it's still a tougher vote. So we'll see what version of this actually emerges from the legislature eventually. My guest is Gladys Carrion. She's the New York State Commissioner for Child and Family Services. And Commissioner Governor Patterson's proposed budget closes 8 juvenile detention centers. It still leaves open dozens of others. But how is juvenile detention different from prison? Give us that background and tell us why you support the closing of these centers.
The facilities that are being proposed to be closed or consolidated or merged are facilities that we no longer need. Many of the facilities that we have are in communities upstate New York, in the North Country, where really they're not placing young people in our facilities. They're not arresting young people, and they're not placing them in our facilities. The family court judges are not placing them in our facilities, and in fact, they are diverting their young people from the system. What we do is we export young people from New York City and the metropolitan area into upstate facilities. And what we're proposing is really regionalizing the system and making sure that those young people from New York City, if they must be placed, stay close to their home, their community of origin, so that we can engage families and work with families.
Are there good downstate facilities and enough of them?
Well, we think that there are. In fact, we have over 500 excess beds that we don't need. So even if I close those beds, I will still have more than enough capacity throughout the state to meet any need that there might arise. And the other very important salient fact is that this is a very expensive system. It could cost anywhere from $110,000 to $200,000 to house a young person in my system. I actually think that we could put that money to much better use.
You could send them to college for that money.
To Harvard.
And so where does job training come in? I mean, this was a big source of debate, education and job training, during the Pataki administration, when they reduced the amount of education that was available to inmates of all kinds in the prison system, under the theory that these were subsidies for education or job training being given to people who had committed crimes, and those subsidies were not available to the law-abiding.
Well, you know, I think that was really a unfortunate decision. And what I've discovered in our juvenile justice system is that we don't have, as a matter of course, programs to educate our young people, higher education programs to educate our young people. And we have started now a partnership with some of the local community colleges upstate to really provide our young people with educational opportunities. We have an educational program. We have a GED program. In fact, I have the highest passage rate in the state for GED. The young people who take my GED exams have an 82% passage rate. I think that education is a really important factor in trying to move young people successfully back into the community.
How do you decide what kind of education or job training? For example, I know a guy who's trying to start a barber training program as an alternative to incarceration in New York to help kids get on a pretty simple and in-demand career track. Where does job training come in, and what's the scope of that?
Well, unfortunately, right now, we don't really have a robust job training program in our juvenile justice facilities. It's pretty hit and miss. And in fact, we're working very closely with the Department of Labor to really create a job training program or vocational career training program that will be sector focused, that we identify where are the jobs. And in fact, we have a really good program that we just started a pilot to create training for green jobs. And so we are just rolling that pilot out, and we are hopeful that we're going to be able to do that in all of our facilities, really train young people for jobs that are going to be available in the marketplace.
Calling in is Sudhir Venkatesh. He's, as some of you may know, professor of sociology at Columbia and author of the books Gang Leader for a Day and Off the Books, The Underground Economy of the Urban Poor. He was a guest on the show for that book, and he's calling in as a caller right now. Professor Venkatesh, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick comment and a question. I just served on the grand jury for several weeks. And while the Rockefeller drug law reform is going to be useful if it goes through to address sentencing, well before that process, a grand jury would, as many people know, determine whether a case should be allowed to go to trial. The grand juries are actually empowered to say, no, this charge isn't a felony, this should go to family court, or we should lower the charge. But most grand jury members don't even know that, and most district attorneys and prosecutors won't tell you that, so it doesn't really serve as a checks and balances. And I was wondering, my question is, if the commissioner knew or could speak to whether there could be part of this process could be grand jury reform, which actually could deal with a lot of the cases, the nonviolent cases, well before they get to sentencing, which is really what the Rockefeller drug laws are about.
And before we get the answer, I want to add my own story, because Professor, that I had a similar, but probably better than yours, grand jury experience a few years ago. I was on a Manhattan grand jury, and this was a grand jury of a bunch of pretty savvy people who were kind of skeptical of sending a lot of low-level drug offenders to prison. So while we certainly did indict the vast majority of people who the DA brought before us, there was a lot of discussion when there was a low-level drug offender who would come in. I mean, just a possession charge or a little bit of dealing marijuana or something. And this grand jury let a bunch of people go because they didn't want to put people into the system for doing what they considered kind of, you know, low-level, relatively non-threatening things, even though it was kind of flaunting the law. But it was very interesting, you know, when I did that month, to see some of the grand jury deliberations around these Rockefeller drug laws and the perceptions of them. But Commissioner Carrion, you want to respond to Professor Venkatesh?
Well, I think the professor raises a really important point, and which is really the system really requires a much larger reform. My task force and our transformation of the juvenile justice system is really focused on those areas where I have jurisdiction, and that is really, quite frankly, after a young person is adjudicated in the family court system and it's sent into my system. But, you know, there are a number of areas that really need, the family court being one of them, and there is another, Bar Association committee that's looking at and some reforms of the family court system. But there are lots of areas ripe for some inquiry.
Do you want to add anything else, Professor? Is there anything from Gang Leader for a Day that that comes into this discussion, especially for the juvenile end of it?
Well, just again, very briefly. So, as you nicely described, if a grand jury is educated, they can kind of take an active force. You know, just as another comment, so many of these people who come in with a drug offense, they're such low-level players in the drug economy, and it's really an economically motivated crime. I'm not excusing their behavior, but we have to make sure that we understand that these are vulnerable young people who have very few other choices, and that has to be taken into account in the process, and it's very difficult to do that.
Thanks a lot for calling in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
From our comments page, Jamal in Brooklyn writes, I would really like someone to address juvenile justice systems from a much larger, holistic approach. How does our poor educational system feed into juvenile delinquency? Why do we still incentivize incarceration by allowing private corporations to run our prisons in upstate communities and upstate communities to count prisoners as part of their population for budgeting purposes? This is a much larger issue than just juvenile detention or the Rockefeller drug laws. Let's take a couple of those. Do upstate communities get to count prisoners as part of their population for budget allocation purposes?
They do.
And so those same offenders who come primarily from the downstate counties, as you mentioned, also get deleted from the population count down around here,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Deprives communities here of resources.
And the incentivizing incarceration by allowing private corporations to run our prisons. Do you agree that that's a problem? Because isn't part of what you want for juvenile detention reform, closing these public detention facilities, to allow more private facilities to take these kids?
Well, you know, in the juvenile justice system, it really is somewhat different. I actually want the young people, where possible, where they do not pose a risk to public safety, to stay in their communities and live in their homes. And we wrap services around their families and have services and supports in the community. For those young people that have to be removed from their communities, there are voluntary agencies, nonprofit agencies that work with these young people. We could have there a myriad of programs and models, day programs. There are programs. Some of these agencies are they are private agencies in the sense that they're not nonprofit, but they're not profit making. In the adult prison, they're profit making agencies, unlike in the juvenile justice system and the agencies we work with. And these are really still they're placed with these agencies, but they're not. It is not a correctional model like my facilities are. And so, in the scheme of things, they are. Sometimes, if they are able to provide the necessary services, preferable to the correctional model right now in my facilities. But there is a big difference between the adult and the juvenile system.
And here's a follow-up to that from Beth in Queens. Beth, you're on WNYC. We've got a short time for you, so right to the point, okay?
Yeah, hi, how are you? Hi, okay. Commissioner. I'm calling because I am really excited about the facility closures that are happening upstate, but I want to know if any of that money is being redirected towards alternative to placement programs in the communities in New York.
You know, because of the budget crisis, as we all know, there is a small amount of money in my budget for alternatives to detention and to placement. But unfortunately, the savings that will accrue as a result of closing of these facilities is not, at this point in time, going to be available for reinvestment because of our deficit. And I am as disappointed as everyone else is, but these are very dire fiscal times. And so we have not been able to take that money as we did last year when I was able to close four facilities and do some reinvestment. I am hoping to find ways to be able to raise some private dollars, collaborate with my other sister agencies to be able to leverage their resources to see what we can do to make sure that their resources at the community level. I have a project now with the Department of Correctional, DCJS, Department of Criminal Services, and also with the JAG, which is the Juvenile Justice Advisory Group in the state, to really see if we can align our resources. Is there a way to leverage to really try to compensate for the fact that we're not going to have resources because of the financial crisis? But it is, you know, it is real concern.
We have to leave it there because we're out of time. We've left so much on the table. Our lines have been jammed the whole time. So we'll have to follow up at some point. Is there a date when this task force report is due to come out?
In September.
So if not before, then. Gladys Carrion, Commissioner of the New York State Office of Children and Family Services, thanks so much for joining us
today.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And still to come this hour, an Iraq war vet's impression of the troop reduction plan and what it will mean for returning veterans. And WNYC's Andrea Bernstein is up next to report on Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Patterson now at odds over how stimulus money will be spent in New York. Andrea in a minute, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.